good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Wednesday, middle of the week, May the 25th, 2016, 12:16 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and people are getting ready for that big Memorial Day holiday. Schools are letting out all over the area, and the weather is very nice here. We might have a couple days of showers, but the weekend is looking pretty good, and when it's 80 degrees after not so bad a winter, we can deal with 80 degrees and hopefully have a great, great Memorial Day. Today in this hour, we're going to have a lot of fun, though, because there's a lot of things going on in the world, politically, sports-wise, certainly no lack of news in the world today. And a gentleman who I like to bring on from time to time to talk about all those things is one of my favorite guests. He's a long-time former HBO boxing analyst, still does many, many things, stays very active, and is never going to retire, and we're glad to hear that. He is the legendary Larry Merchant. Larry, how are you?
Good, Scott.
Larry, how do you spend the holiday here, the big Memorial Day kickoff to summer?
Well, when you're retired, as I am, every weekend is... It's Memorial Day weekend, and we just got back from a long trip to Europe, so that was a bunch of Memorial Day weekends strung together.
Larry, when you first left HBO a few years ago, you told me you didn't like the retirement word. A few years have passed. Is it okay now?
It's really been okay all the time. Some people say to me, well, would you rather still be working, or would you rather be retired? And I tell them both. Retirement is swell. I have grandchildren out here, and it's part of my holiday to Europe. I have a grandchild going to school in Paris, and watching the next generations grow is a good thing. And just enjoying living in a good place, Santa Monica, and watching the scene and occasionally doing some little thing that interests me.
When you first left HBO, it wasn't too long after that you did go back and do some fights with George Foreman, did the call of the action. Is there anything like that on the horizon or anything still going on?
Not really. I don't think my name comes up in discussions about who we should hire. I think the television world is for young, enthusiastic people, and when you reach my age, which is now 85, people just want to pat you on the back and sometimes ask you, well, tell me about the Ali Fraser fight.
Do you miss getting the calls?
I can't say I do. I watch prize fights, among other interests I have. I try to keep up to date. I have a lot of friends in the boxing world. So I'm curious about it and how it plays out. But I don't imagine it misses me, and my views and poetry and whatever else I did, life goes on.
If somebody called tomorrow, because it's a little different world than the HBO days, and said, Larry, we love what you did, we want you to come cover this for us. Maybe it's an internet company, maybe it's a small company. Would you do it, and does the money matter at this point?
I've had such calls. I just turned down a gig for later in the summer that didn't particularly interest me. And various people have tried to get me to do something in the digital world. And that's nice, but I guess I would just prefer the title of senior bloviator, who gets called say, on a weekly or biweekly basis to talk about something that I witnessed back in the days. And I have no problem with it. I have my own life, and it's pretty good.
Is there something that one of these companies came to you and said, Larry, what do you want to do? And you would say, that's something I'd like to do.
I don't know. I mean, I've hosted shows. I've produced. I've done a whole bunch of things that nobody remembers except me, and I'm not sure I remember all of them. Do I still have something to offer? I don't know. But my phone is not ringing off the hook.
You know, it's interesting, Larry, because, of course, when it comes to Ohio and Columbus, Ohio being 45 minutes down the road from where we are, Buster Douglas is a big name, and one of the things I remember you best for is, of course, the fight between Tyson and Douglas, but when you did that studio interview, and I don't know if we've ever talked about this, after the fight, where Tyson had disputed it and Don King had disputed it, the fight, the rematch, never came off, but you had Buster Douglas, Mike Tyson, after this biggest upset in history, in the same room, you were hosting it. What was that like? How'd you make it happen?
Well, I can't claim credit for making it happen. It was such an extraordinary event that the executives and producers at HBO really made it happen. And of course, one thing left out, and virtually left out in the historic memory of the of this event, is the attempt by Don King and Tyson to overturn a knockout. He was so valuable to the boxing world at the time, Tyson, that officials were trying to overturn a knockout to take away what Douglas had achieved in the ring by taking it away outside of the ring. And here's, I had actually left Tokyo when Don King and his henchmen were claiming that Tyson had actually knocked out Douglas in a previous round. It was a long count, blah, 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 blah. And the WBC was trying to overturn it. Now, here's the story that, another story connected to that that is not widely known. There was a meeting in Newark, New Jersey, of the various claimants and a mediation board. And I was a witness. And I told them exactly what I just said, that there are people in this room trying to win outside the ring what they lost inside the ring. And B pointed out a bunch of knockouts were put together by HBO cinematically to show that a 10 count is not necessarily 10 seconds, that most knockouts that we had seen would take 12 seconds, 13 seconds, 15 seconds, depending on some circumstance, and so on and so forth. And so the claim that there shouldn't have been a knockout and all that was just glaringly corrupt, and Buster kept his title.
Sitting there on that set that day, certainly nobody was going to physically harm you, but I remember back in the 70s when Frazier took on Ali And Howard Cosell did a similar thing on ABC Wide World of Sports. And there was a little scuffle on the set. This certainly had every bit of anger and animosity and legal wranglings. When you went onto the set that day, did you have any trepidation that this was going to be a difficult event?
No, I was very pleased that everybody was showing up. What struck me, and I assume others during it, is that Buster apparently was briefed not to let this get out of control, to let the story tell itself. The fight itself was the story. And Buster was very, very withdrawn during this, the entire questioning period. And even Tyson, you could see, Tyson, who had been a sort of student of boxing history, and I bore down on him about taking part in this and responsibility, because King was the leading player in that. And, you know, he sort of sheepishly went along with the script that King and Jose Suleiman of the WBC were trying to write. And Buster blocked every attempt to try to show his inner feelings about them trying to take away something from him that he had earned. And it was probably a good strategy to make the fight the central point and not all of the post-fight maneuvering.
Larry, before we did this interview today, I was sitting back in the office, and I pulled up on YouTube the tribute that HBO did to you, the video package, when you left a couple years ago. And one thing that struck to me, because we've had you on a lot now, and I love it, and I hope it continues to happen, but you are one of the nicest people, and you didn't ask, you'll send the check later for this, but you're one of the nicest people to deal with in the world. Totally. It couldn't be easier. Couldn't
Thank
be more
you.
Accessible. But when you did an interview, it was almost like Mike Wallace. You would push people out of the way, ask what some people could probably deem nasty questions. Certainly some of the people being interviewed did. You could get rough. Which is more the real Larry Merchant, and was that any of that show business?
Well, I guess both are part of me, and thankfully, and thank you. The thing is about covering a live sporting event is it's not like being a writer or columnist as I was for 20 years before I went into television, and you have all kinds of time to interview. Sometimes days. I would trying to get a column once on the great Bill Bradley, the basketball player, and later the senator, and I just hung around for two or three days picking up little stuff to try to get something that was complete and fresh. Well, when you're in the ring after a fight, you got 2 minutes, and boxers, like other athletes and human beings, if they're involved in a conflict, they frequently want to dance around it and not, especially when it's just happened and they haven't really processed what went on, and sometimes they're not the best people to process it anyway, since they've just been in the battle. And I'm trying to get the story. And you know, it's like variations of something a fighter, Prince Nassim, once said to me after he lost the fight. It's God's will. Well, as I said to him, God isn't here. I have to interview you. I'm trying to get some human reaction, or just show a human reaction, which whatever part of the human emotional spectrum is there. And after an hour of fighting and having your team surrounding you and congratulating you or surrounding you and mourning with you, sometimes it was difficult, and you have to fight your way through and get the story. And that was my job.
Everybody, of course, still talks about, maybe it's because recent time and maybe it's because it was internet time, was the Mayweather incident after the fight. But two things that stick out in my mind of Larry Merchant being a tough journalist. I don't remember the fight, but the quote was simple as could be. It was, "To say he has a glass chin is an insult to glass." And when George Foreman won the world championship against Michael Moore, and I assume George was probably a friend at that point because he had done broadcasts on HBO with you. You came down kind of hard on him, and even after the fight. Is that something inside of you where even if you're friendly with them, you have to ask the tough question?
Yeah. and I think, you know, ultimately, hopefully you get respect for that. That's what you're trying to do, when a guy's been in a battle like that for an hour, your job is still to get the story as you see it. And if there's some controversial or thing that happens in a fight, you're supposed to hone down on it. And I never thought any differently of my job as a print journalist or as a television journalist, although there are differences, one of them which I just described. But yes, with friends, story. Sugar Ray Leonard came out of retirement after having one fight in 5 years because of an eye problem. And he steps up to fight Marvin Hagler, an outstanding middleweight champion. He had never fought above Leonard above 154 in his natural weight. The weight at which he became an international star was 147. People thought he was crazy or suicidal. And I clearly remember the day before the fight, fighter meetings, etc., and Ray, I think in a half whisper, said to me, "Who are you picking?" And I was friendly with Ray. I had done many fights with him at HBO, and he was immensely likable and so on. I said, "I have to pick Hagler, but I hope I'm wrong." And I think ultimately, he and others would think less of me if I didn't give my true thoughts about an event.
It's kind of interesting, Larry, because that's kind of the next question I wanted to ask here. Certainly, I agree with you. I think that the greatest upset in boxing was Buster Douglas over Mike Tyson. But it was an upset in a different way, because really nobody knew Buster Douglas, and they certainly didn't think that was going to happen. When Foreman beat Moore, people certainly knew who George Foreman was, and he certainly was the sentimental favorite. When you were sitting there that night calling, and it was on HBO, and I remember it was right around Thanksgiving time, so I'm sure it had a big rating because of being accessible, not on pay-per-view, and people, it was a big fight just because Foreman was in it. And it was on HBO. Now, that being said, that's after you had worked with him quite a bit on HBO. Did you think he could pull it off, and were you rooting for him?
My recollection is I go into most fights just rooting for a good fight, because I may know both fighters, and because I may have certain thoughts about how it probably will play out. But I thought George had took a terrible beating in that fight from Michael, and who was younger and smaller and faster. And that was, did I think he would win the fight while he was taking the beating? No, he was clearly behind. But the great thing about George and most of the top heavyweight champions is their fierce will, the ability to take big punches from big men. And George was off the charts in his ability to take punishment. And he took serious punishment in that fight, as he had when he fought Evander Holyfield. And to me, the fight was about that this, despite all the punishment, he persisted, he kept coming, and when the knockout came, although there have been some signs of the fight changing, you never really know, it was a huge surprise to me and a pleasant surprise, because it was such a good story, and because I like George.
Because you've covered boxing for so long, boxing is kind of interesting because it's certainly not at its height right now. But there are people who at its height, or at least it was still big in the 70s and 80s and even into the 90s. George Foreman is still living. Mike Tyson is still living. Chuck Wepner is still living. Muhammad Ali is still living. Larry Holmes is still living. Why don't we see them more?
I can't answer that. I don't know where you would expect to see them. Occasionally one shows up for an event, usually when a promoter or somebody attached to the promotion is paying them. Not all of them are great, quote, boxing fans in terms of following the sport. They gave a lot of years, hard years, to it. So I'm not sure, you know, what role they could play in it on a ongoing level. I know Sugar Ray Leonard still turns up occasionally. Mike Tyson is an attraction at some events, and I actually once appeared on a panel with him. Unbeknownst to me that he would show up for a beer sponsor of an event, of a pay-per-view event. So I can't answer directly. Not all of them are stars. People really don't know Larry Holmes that much anymore unless they're avid boxing fans. Time marches on, and we're all sitting in the shadows.
Being that Ali, certainly different than all the rest, at this age and stage that he's in, and your age and stage in life, would you like to go sit with Ali? Is that something you'd like? Is that a story you would like to do?
I guess so, but he's not very communicative these days. The last time I saw him, I'm going to say 5 years ago, but I don't remember whether it was 4 or 7. He hugged me. I hugged him. We go back a long, long, long way. But he was incommunicative. And I see him, when I see him that way, I think he would do the same thing all over again. That's who he was. And he was willing to pay the price. And it's sad, but at the same time, it's part of the human condition.
Being that a few years ago, Sports Illustrated, and I think they even did it again 3 or 4 years ago, always names Ali the greatest athlete of his time, of the century, all those things. When he goes, God forbid and hope it's not soon, what will that be like? Is that on the level of what we've seen with an Elvis Presley, a Michael Jackson, or maybe not because he's been ill and incommunicable for so long?
It will be a huge story. He defined an era, or helped define an era that still resonates as one of the cultural milestones of our country, with all of the anti-war effort, the feminist movement, the sexual movement, the civil rights movement, and other movements that came together in a tremendous surge of energy and changed the country in a lot of ways. And Ali was one of the people who was a signal person in that movement, and that people felt that he represented something very powerful outside of the ring, someone whose personality and exploits resonated around the world. Nelson Mandela once told me in an interview that every person in Africa knew Muhammad Ali. And every person from everything I could gather on every continent and in worlds unknown knew about Ali and will care about it when he goes. And and people who and the majority of us have been born since that era, and he will be someone who resonates historically as part of a great social and political time.
That being said, in the last 15 minutes, I do want to touch on a few current events here. The MMA website, MMA Mania, reported yesterday that Mayweather is going to come out of retirement to face Conor McGregor. It's set for September, and the official announcement is coming in 2 weeks. Do you see that, and if so, why?
Do I see that, or will I see that?
Do you see it happening? Would you like to see it?
I have no interest in it, but it would undoubtedly be a major event. I'm not sure what kind of fight or scuffle it would be, but in terms of finding an event that will strike a chord, it sounds like something that the participants can make a lot of money for.
Is Mayweather, there have been other undefeated fighters, but certainly Mayweather touts that he is the only. When he, in current times, comes out of retirement, and the older he gets, and the less he boxes, why would he do this? Muhammad Ali, frankly, said many times he came out for money.
Well, that's what it would be about, but it would also, you know, I think he has some idea that if he were to go and win a 50th fight and make $100 million, he'd be able to somehow use that as a brand to further his business adventures in the future. I think that's it. But he likes being in the spotlight and kind of money. I think he would, come out of the shadows to take another shot at it. Not a lot to lose.
Another story that, of course, you can't get away from, nothing to do, kind of a tie-in with boxing, because certainly his name has been on a lot of buildings where boxing events have taken place. Donald Trump, since last we spoke, looks like it's a done deal that he will be the Republican nominee. What do you make of this phenomenon?
Well, I'm not sure what it all represents. I suppose it, the biggest part of it is communications and how that can change the game, and how somebody who is famous because of communications, somebody who is a great circus barker, can get people's attention, and there apparently is some kind of yearning for change. I'm not exactly sure what they're trying to change and how they're going to change it, but it certainly indicates some dissatisfaction with politicians. Republican Party had 17 of them trying to get to where Trump is today, most of them with experience, and some of it with a lot of experience, and the people went for the circus barker.
What does that say about the nation and the people who voted for the circus barker?
I'm not sure. I think there are a lot of, excuse me, stupid people out there who think that you can run a country the way you run a company. It staggers the imagination that people actually think that, and that knowledge is not as and experience is not as important as personality and triumphalism and telling people we're going to be great. I don't know. I think we have a pretty great country right now. But he has struck a nerve with his nerve, and here we are.
That being said, during most of the primary season, he did take shots at other Republicans and things on their looks, and called Jeb Bush low energy and things of that nature. But in the last week, because it also looks like Hillary Clinton's going to be the presumptive nominee on the Democratic side, he's really taken it to another level in the last week by directly accusing people in his own Trump way of things. Bill Clinton of rape and murder of people.
Well, and remember, he was as well a leading Obama critic and got notoriety by telling people he'll show that Obama was not born in America. I mean, and it's amazing to me that a serious segment of the American voting population doesn't give a damn whether this guy knows anything, and they're happy. And it's about, I think a lot of it has gone from skepticism to cynicism over our political process, and expects politicians and people in public to lie, cheat, and steal. And so if he says things that contradict himself all the time, it's a shrug, and, oh, that's just the politicians. And we're not demanding higher standards, the lower standards.
Larry, the thing that has astonished me, having an outlet every day during this whole Trump thing, is that I have said, because I really do, when it comes to politics, try to be down the middle. But I have come off liberal in this thing simply by pointing out Donald Trump's flaws, much like you just did. But the thing that astonishes me is the call-ins. When we open up the phone lines, 90% defend what he does. And we have had people in here. Just recently, 2 weeks ago, we had Tony Atlas, who's a 3-time former Mr. USA and still does some pro wrestling work. He was in the studio and spent an hour defending Donald Trump. And if Donald Trump doesn't win the election, we're all going to be speaking Chinese. How does he get to the point to where he... people will defend him no matter what. What is he so... how does he relate to people?
I don't know. We've always worshipped success. There's always been some very successful businessman who captures the public attention. You know, we're a country where... guys who go out and do it and make it are exemplars of what the society is. And but it's still amazing to me that people have invested in a guy who, to put it simply, lies all the time and exaggerates all the time. And it's like they want a great show rather than real leadership.
That being said, there is great emotion support for him. But just last night, Trump was giving a rally. 8,000 people outside of the Albuquerque Convention Center were burning items. Police officers were hurt because things were thrown. Gas was tossed upon the 8,000 people. Is this dangerous, the things he's saying? Could we be in trouble here?
I don't know. I think he's deliberately provocative. You know, he's the guy who will shout fire in a crowded theater because somebody lit up a cigarette and cause a stampede and be happy that he's going to be in the headlines the next day. And he was able to dominate the Republican field with actions. And my understanding of what happened last night was that there were people there peacefully protesting with signs and stuff and protesting Trump. And that led to some scuffling. And why wouldn't you expect that in New Mexico with some of the things he said about Mexican Americans and others? He gave a speech, a harangue, a talk to some people indoors, but that nobody would care about if at this stage of the election process. But there you go, Donald Trump is in the headlines again, and he's a kind of a intuitive genius about how to do those things, and maybe that's what we care about in this country.
That being said, the thing that's interesting, usually after an event like last night, the protesters, the sheer volume of them, what happened, people being hurt, somebody would try to calm that down. Trump issued a tweet right after he knew about it and said, this is what he said, the protesters in New Mexico were thugs who were flying the Mexican flag. The rally inside was big and beautiful, but outside, criminals. Doesn't that just fan the flame?
Sure. And that's what he's doing. He's appealing to the nativist element, to the racist elements, and here is further evidence how everybody is against them because they're against him.
That being said, you've met this man and spent more time with him in life than I have and probably most. Is this who he is?
I take him for what I see. I don't think you could have scripted this. Even I don't think he could have scripted. I don't know how serious he was when all this began, and suddenly he found that in that field of 17, all he had to do was become an insult comic and to separate himself from others. Most notably to me, your governor. And so he's carrying on and being successful at it. And the fact that you know about his tweet and all of that and are putting it out on the air is helping him achieve a goal with his followers. I don't know that there are more followers for him than there are people who are scared of him, but it certainly is not an election like I've seen before.
And isn't that the conundrum, Larry, being in journalism for so long? When a riot would happen in the 60s, based around civil rights, when the Watts riot happened, when somebody was turned down from voting and there was violence, you cover it, and usually the person who did the rioting's name gets mentioned because it's a story, but it does in some way appeal to the people who say, go get them. So how...
He's been a public figure for some time. He obviously relishes that. I mean, when the Clinton campaign comes out with him saying how he was rooting for that collapse of the housing market that led to the worst implosion of our economy since the Great Depression, and he was rooting for it because he could make a lot of money out of it. And he turns that into a plus by saying, well, it shows what a good businessman I am and how I can make money for America. So it's kind of shameless, but it's a shameless public genius.
Well, with a minute and a half left to go, the interesting thing is, I know when I mentioned that tweet, it gives him attention, but the truth is, the people who follow him will continue to follow him, and the people who don't like him will not like him.
Now, I just wonder if there's a turning point.
I don't know.
And if the Republican establishment, the conservative establishment, it comes to a point where they say, I can't be identified with this clown. The reason he hasn't gotten full-throated endorsements from politicians is they're afraid that he's going to say something that even offends his supporters. And I think he's trying to find out where that where that could possibly be. Is there something he could say that will just turn off all those people who have blindly followed him?
It's hard to imagine. The final question, Larry, you've met the guy. You voted, I'm sure, in a lot of presidential elections. November 9th, 2016 is a Wednesday. If you get up and it's President-elect Donald Trump, is it the most worrisome time in a presidential politic fashion that there's ever been?
Yeah, I think in this world of communications and and the way words go around the world so fast that you can't even see them, and that stuff a president says can affect the business world, the political world, the international situation. It scares. I'm not a guy who scares easily, just sitting back and watching this. But I imagine that will get my attention and a lot of other people's. And it's not something that serious people look forward to.
Larry Merchant, the consummate professional, and we're glad to hear his voice every time he's on. Larry, keep on keeping on. Have a great Memorial Day, and I hope we can talk again soon.
You as well, Scott.
Thank you so much.
Cheers.
Larry Merchant, the legend. We're going to break and come back. We'll talk about whatever, probably politics, in about 10 minutes. Stay with us.